welcome to Cairo Nights. On the line right now is Cairo Radio Zone world famous Chris Sully Sullivan, survivor of COVID-19, tamer of lions, alligator wrestler, world-class weightlifter extraordinaire. Chris Sully Sullivan, how you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm pretty good. I'm also quite a ladies' man. Just don't tell my wife.
Yeah, so you have been a busy, busy boy because you've been covering what's going on I-90. Now, I've been talking about this with Hannah Scott. I've been talking about it with Sugar Shane Peterson. I have a theory about this, Chris, before we get into the finer points of this. Because many people, like I was listening to, you know, Dory Monson today, he was saying, well, it's the drug addicts and it's the mental illness that's going on, which I totally agree with. And then I've heard other people say that these are kind of rogue actors or copycats or something like this. But I actually, my theory goes like this, and let me know what you think about this. I think that it's kind of a Pied Piper situation. I think that there's somebody in a group of people who is encouraging this kind of behavior, who is talking about or extolling the kind of high or the rush that you get from throwing rocks off of I-90. And I think that that is spread like a social contagion, if you will, that these people in that camp or in the surrounding areas have been talking about it and have been a peripheral effect, if you will, this social contagion, this social pathogen that has spread throughout the group, which are kind of drug addled, social outcasts, non-social individual, kind of parasocial behavior. And now we have an epidemic of people throwing rocks off of I-90 and potentially. Well, thankfully, nobody's died, but just, you know, people getting injured, people getting hurt, things of that nature. That's my running theory at the moment.
That's interesting because, I mean, it hasn't happened, and yet we've had homeless camps forever.
Right.
Right? So yeah. This seems to be somewhat of a new phenomenon.
Pied Piper.
And I'm not sure, you know, was it because there were fewer cars on the road last year, and there was more because during the pandemic, there's more opportunity for these for folks in the homeless camps to do things. Maybe they started throwing rocks when there was nobody around, and then they thought, well, you know, maybe I'll do. I mean, I know that's kind of interesting because it's only been for the last couple of months that we've really seen this go up. And this, I mean, it's not unusual. I mean, every year there are incidents of things being thrown off of overpasses. Sure. and whatnot. It just seems to be really acute over the last couple of months and in this same general area. I mean, let's not forget, we've had things thrown off of overpasses a little bit further north near the convention center.
Yep.
Where we had, a scooter thrown off the thing. We've had rebar thrown off overpasses. But lately, it's been debris and rocks that come up right next to the freeway. And that's one of the interesting things about this camp is you could, even if you weren't living in this camp, it's a green space. You can basically walk right up to the side of I-90.
Right.
Next to the Jersey barrier, and you can pop the Jersey barrier and walk right out into traffic if you want. And the access there is incredibly easy to get to. So I'm not sure why now, but there has been an uptick of this. I mean, it was happening 2 or 3 times a day over the last couple of weeks. I mean, it happened again last night. It may have happened again earlier today. They were investigating something in the noon hour, I think, right around there. So, yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting theory because maybe one person did it and they told everybody, oh, it's kind of cool. I pegged this car and then it moved along. And then, yeah, I mean, we're lucky. No one, I mean, people are throwing rebar.
Yeah.
So just like, we're lucky no one has died.
I've seen now, I don't know how many images of the windshields caved in. And it is amazing to me that no one has died. And I say that knowing that at any point in time, someone could potentially die from a rock or something to that effect. The Pied Piper theory basically comes from this, Chris Sullivan. When I was in middle school, there was a friend of mine named Justin who all the cool kids hung out on this side of the library and all the kind of proto-punk rockers hung out on this side of the library, and the library was between us. And we noticed one day that when we were drinking our milk that the school had provided to us, that it was unusually aerodynamic. And so my friend Justin decided, I don't know why, to huck his milk up and over the library. And so it would explode around the cool kids, and we would all laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. Now, that took off like a social contagion. And all of a sudden, now, not Jack Stein, not a young Jack Stein, because I was a very good boy. There's no way I would do that. But it kind of escalated and escalated and escalated until our friend Billy, no relation to Billy Sunshine, took an actual orange, hucked it over the library, hit somebody in the head. They had to go to the nurse's office. We all got in trouble. I think that that's how it's escalated over time. And now, why after 2 months the city has finally decided to do something about it is astounding to me. Two whole months.
Yeah, it's weird. And this, I mean, this whole year, I mean, 2 months plus, I've been talking to the Department of Transportation and going, guys, why aren't we doing something about this? This is incredibly dangerous. And this is where we kind of got into this quasi Seattle thing where we don't want to take responsibility because it's not really our fault, but maybe. So in other words, what we have is the Washington Department of Transportation. It's their right of way. It's their property. These people are illegally accessing DOT property, but the DOT is not an enforcement agency. So they won't go in and push these people. They don't want to push them out into the neighboring communities because, one, they don't do that. Well, if they were to push them out, the city of Seattle, they'd be their responsibility because it'd be their police or their whatever, be able to have the social services, whatever. They would push them out into their neighborhood.
Right.
But Seattle is also the area in which the right of way is in. And then the DO, and they're also not necessarily law enforcement, but the state patrol then is, whose job it is to maintain and keep those areas safe. Everyone was kind of pointing at, well, we can't do this, and no one was taking responsibility. Meanwhile, rocks are being thrown.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are we not doing anything? And then I'm not sure why just now they decided. And well, I mean, I could tell you why. And here's the state patrol and everybody, because now state patrol, the DOT, both state and local, have come together and said, OK, we're going to work together and do this. And the reason they did is early on in this, I talked to the Department of Transportation at the state level, and they're like, listen, we can't say for certain the people that are throwing the rocks are coming from that homeless camp, because, as I said, anybody could walk through that green space, go through the homeless camp and throw stuff onto the freeway. Anybody. And so it took the Department of Transportation working with the state patrol, making a couple of arrests. They then investigated back and said, OK, we've got enough evidence to believe that this is in this camp, not just random people using the camp. And at that point, they're like, OK, we think we have enough information to move forward with it. That's the process. I mean, they had to make a few arrests and they have several, including another one just yesterday. And so they developed the information that, hey, now we can say for certain it's this area, so we'll clean this one up. But it took that kind of threshold before they moved in, because they didn't want to go in and break up the camp, because for a variety of reasons, Seattle reasons, national reasons, whatever. Because the CDC is still telling people nationally it's best to keep those groups together,
right?
Because you don't want to spread, because those folks are probably not the healthiest in some way, you know, so you don't want to move them around a lot. So that's kind of the thumbnail for why now. It's based on investigative work that really tied it to that camp.
Well, this kind of reminds me of, I'll juxtapose two things for you. Back in 2016, I'm working for a little teeny tiny radio station, and you know, it's the election year, it's a really big deal, emotions are really high. Couple of gals got a big old Trump banner, and they were hanging it off the side of an overpass on the freeway. And they would stand there for hours to Trump, Trump, Trump. And this banner was huge. It was something like 20 by 20. And the way that they kept it, you know, from flowing in the breeze is they put weights at the bottom of this. Chris is shuddering at this. So they put weights at the bottom of it. Now, the city came along and they said, hey, listen, you guys, you're fine to do your Trump stuff if you want to, but that is a disaster waiting to happen. If you drop that, it's going to land on top of a car potentially, and then those weights are going to wrap around the wheels and you're going to kill people. And those people fought, the people who were holding it, fought tooth and nail to be able to go back up on that overpass and do that. Now, they lost, and rightfully so. But they had only been doing that, I think, for about 7 days before the city stepped in. Now, I juxtapose that with the world that we live in now, where someone is actively throwing stuff off of a thing, and then everybody just kind of holds their hands up and goes, well, what do you want us to do about it? I understand the whole we're not an enforcement agency type thing. But at the same time, the idea that you can't find somebody to deal with it is weird to me. And the idea that nothing was done previously, again, it's just odd to me that nobody decided, hey, maybe we should do something about this before it gets really, really bad. So
we've had nearly 200 cases.
Yeah.
I mean, this has happened nearly 200 times in the last 3-4 months. That seems like an awful lot before you do something.
Right. So when you think about, you know, I've heard a couple different people talk about what to do with that green space. I've heard some people say fencing it off. I've heard some people say ripping it up and putting rocks there. I've heard some people say, well, you just have to police that space more heavily. What are you thinking in terms of what would be best for that, being that you're the traffic guy?
Well, they have fenced in this area before,
right?
And it costs a lot of money, and that fencing just usually ends up getting vandalized and taken back down.
Oh, okay.
Right? The people basically cut through it.
Yeah,
that happens all over the place. I mean, I wish there was some way that they could prevent the access up to the freeway where you can walk up to it. I don't know how you do that. I'm not inhumane enough to think I want to stick a bunch of jagged rocks out there where people, you know, who are down on their luck can't find a place to lay down flat.
Right.
I mean, I get that. I would love to have them moved, but I don't know where to put them. See, that's the thing, is that we would love to get these, but we'd have no housing. We could go down that rabbit hole of all these different things, which doesn't answer your question.
Yeah.
I would love to keep the green space. I'd like to find some creative way they can keep people away from that close access to the road, because it's ridiculously close. And again, it's not just people in that camp. Anybody could go up there through that green space. And so I'm not sure. It's a tough decision. I'll be interesting to see what modify means by the Washington Department of Transportation, because that's what they're going to do after they clean the camp tomorrow. They said they're going to modify the space to try to prevent this from happening. Again, I don't know how you prevent it on overpasses other than, you know, chaining those all up, which
right.
come with their own issues. But yeah, this is an interesting spot based on geography and, you know, what you do. I would certainly cut the vegetation down as much as you could to maybe make it more open, so it wouldn't be so easy to hide and do whatever it is that you're doing there in the camps. But I don't know. It's a tough call. I don't know how you can prevent people from doing that.
I have a great idea. I have the best idea.
All right.
Okay. Hear me out on this. We get a beekeeper, okay? And we say, listen, we got this green space. We got this green
space. I know where you're going.
And you can put up your beehives and as many as you want in this space right here. And, you know, we'll put up some protective units for your beehives, and you can park on the side and you can walk up and you can take care of your bees. And as many beehives as you want to put up there, we'll allow it. Maybe you work with UW, you get some kids coming in, they get to work with the beehives as well. Because if I know one thing about homeless people, they hate bees. When I was homeless, that was my number one nemesis, was bees, because they're always coming after you for some strange and odd reason. So that's what I'm thinking, Chris Sullivan.
I like that. Let's open up a beekeeping area
exactly
right there, and you know, get Wazoo involved. They're the, you know, they're the animal husbandry type
yes.
of stool when it comes to between UW and Wazoo. They're the folks I would go to first when it comes to animal husbandry.
Do you think we could weaponize crows or something like that? Like we could train crows?
The problem with that is those crows are just going to turn their back on us and come right back at
us.
Oh,
yeah, there you go.
That's how smart they are. We would train them, and then they would come back at us.
Before you get out of here, Chris Sullivan, I was talking to Shane Peterson the other day about this idea of lidding. I keep hearing about this idea of a lid.
And
I thought to myself, I was talking to Shane about this off air, because he and I were looking at that fun town little blueprint picture that the city put out, which is this nice green space and all these buildings. And I thought, that sounds expensive, impractical, and not a very good idea. But then Sugar Shane Peterson said, well, we have to develop the space and it can be used for so much more. So, you know, in the last couple of minutes that we have, where do you fall on this idea of litting that area?
Well, it's a very interesting idea because, well, let's first of all, let's follow the money.
Right.
Who wants this idea? People who can develop downtown property that doesn't exist right now.
Right.
We'll cover that over and you got, next thing you know, you've got acres of land in downtown that you can develop. So obviously that's what's driving this, is that prime location, prime real estate that doesn't exist. I'm not a big fan necessarily of that. When I was down in Portland, they tried this idea on I-405 there over Burnside. There, they thought the similar kind of idea, we could reclaim this land, kind of tie both sides of the freeway together. It's ridiculously expensive, and they haven't done anything on that in 25 years.
Wow.
Since they've been talking about it. Similar idea. I mean, I think it'd be great to get some more space back, and if you were going to green space it, but we all know what's going to happen. Development will take over, and we'll get a little green space, and we'll get a bunch of high-rise apartments that no one can afford, except for like 20% of the people. When we were just talking about homelessness, yeah. We need, I was in a hearing earlier today. The state says we're 90,000 housing units below what we need to handle the people that are here.
Wow.
Let's build some low-income housing. Well, I'll tell you what, that's not, sure as heck's not going to happen over that lid right in the heart of downtown Seattle. But I mean, I don't know. It's an interesting idea. I don't like driving under tunnels anyway, so I'm a little concerned. You know, the whole thing might cave in on me if I drive underneath it. But it's an interesting idea. I just don't know how practical it is and how much money it's going to cost and if we'll get really what we want out of it as a community.
That's what I'm thinking, is that you could potentially dump hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, into kind of sealing everything up, putting on this quote-unquote lid. And then, as Sugar Shane Peterson pointed out, one catastrophic event and you're left with trillions of dollars in damages, potentially. I mean, lives lost, whatever it is. Earthquake, whatever. And I'm sure they would retrofit it and test it and all this other kind of stuff. But one catastrophic mistake and that lid all of a sudden, it's almost like if you have this wonderful container and it's full of yogurt and it has a lid on it. One catastrophic mistake means you got yogurt all over the place. So
and I-5 would be shut down.
Totally shut down.
Forget about that. You think traffic's bad now.
Chris Sullivan, you got any final thoughts for us in the last 50 some odd seconds that we have before we have to get out of here on this whole I-90 debacle that we're dealing with?
Just if anybody has any great ideas on how to solve this problem, hit the text line, because it's a ridiculously hard thing to figure out, to get everybody to work together. And listen, we're not going to throw the homeless in jail. We need to be more compassionate. But at some point, public safety's got to reign the day, right? Rule the day. Give us your ideas, because Lord knows we could use them.
Right.
Because what we're doing isn't working.
So that was Car Radio's own Chris Sullivan, weightlifter, lion tamer, traffic guy, and international beekeeping expert. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this. Go in style. Late at night, a big old house gets lonely. All right, welcome back to Cairo Nights on this Soft Rock Wednesday. So yesterday, I was talking to my aunt, and she's a little older lady, and she loves talking to her nephew about every 6 months. And we're chatting about my life and what I want to do in the future. And I say, you know, I think I want to buy a home, and Sarah and I can move into that home, have a couple of kids, white picket fence, enough Pomeranians to form a professional sled dog team, the only Pomeranian sled dog team in the world. These are just simple things that any man wants. And then she says something really interesting to me. She says, well, if you get a home, why don't you get a granny unit in the back? And I said, why would I want to get a granny unit in the back? And she said, well, so your mom can move in. A deep shudder went down my spine. Cold sweat broke out. I said, Cindy, there's no way I'm going to let my mom live with me and my wife. There's just no way. And she said, why? Why don't you want to live with your mom? I might live with my kids. There's nothing wrong with it. You're not being progressive enough. Kids live with their parents all the time. I said, you know, my mom, for as much as I love my mom, if I know exactly what's going to happen, she's going to move into the granny unit. And then within 2 or 3 weeks, she's going to start coming into the main house and she's going to start being critical of the way I fold my clothes and the way I do my dishes and the fact that I have too many Pomeranians and that I should give up my dream of being a Pomeranian sled dog leader. And I don't want that in my life. I don't want my mom's energy in my life as a 33-year-old man. Or when I buy a home, I don't want mom energy in my life. I don't want my wife to see my mom chastise me for being too fat or, you know, not eating enough greens or whatever it is. I want none of that in my life. I say that to say this. When I read this article today about breakthrough COVID cases prompting new calls to mask up in Washington state, the only thing that I could think of was mommy state, mommy state, mommy state. So I want you to take that same feeling of that cold sweat that broke out, chill goes down my spine, thinking about this authoritarian figure coming into my life and telling me what I'm doing wrong, and apply it to this. Our relationship with government has shifted to such a degree that we are no longer in a healthy relationship. There's no longer a healthy balance between us and government. Why? Because technically they work for us, but we act like they're our betters in some way. So just getting into the article, it says that the upswing in COVID-19 cases around Washington and the increased danger from the variants is causing some of the state's health leaders to mask up, including those who are fully vaccinated because of breakthrough cases that are being reported. So that should concern everybody, right? Anybody would have kind of this protective instinct kick in, and you say, oh no, breakthrough cases. Looks like these experimental vaccines don't actually work. What are we going to do? And then you scroll down just a little bit, and you see that Jesse Aramouse, who's the assistant professor at University of Washington Medicine, says most of the cases you are reading about, referred to as breakthrough cases, for the most part, the symptoms are extremely mild. Maybe a runny nose, maybe some light flu-like symptoms. And yet, people are still calling for people to mask up again. Say, well, you got the Delta variant, you've got all these other things going on. And again, the only thing I could think of was mommy state. It's like, okay, I got the vaccine. I did what you asked me to do. I went out and I got the vaccine. State of Washington, 70% vaccination rate, some of the highest in the country, some of the best in the world. And what more could you possibly want? This is what I mean. It just gets so weird. It just gets so awkward. It's like we have government living in our backyard in a granny unit. And every so often they come in, they go, hey, are you wearing that mask? Hey, you got that mask on? Hey, you washing your hands? Hey, you get that vaccine? You get that vaccine? It's this weird maternal energy that I no longer want in my life. And why other people out there look at something like this and they say to themselves, oh yeah, this is, we certainly got to be more careful about this. According to the CDC, no, you don't. If you got the vaccine, don't need to wear the mask anymore. Whether you're indoors, outdoors, doesn't make any difference. Sure, your likelihood of getting a quote unquote breakthrough case is somewhere like, I think it's like one in every, I forget the exact statistic, but you have something like a 0.7% chance of having a breakthrough case. And even in that instance, your likelihood of being hospitalized because of a breakthrough case is basically nothing unless you're already on death's door. It is a weird, maternal, overly protective, overly kind of helicopter mommy mentality that we now have from government. And I'll give you another example. I was reading an article the other day that said that all students come the fall will be masked up. Every single one. Talking about every student over the age of 4 is going to be wearing a mask. 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds. I'm thinking to myself, okay, so if we're actually just going by the data, right? If we're actually just going by the numbers, how many kids do you think tragically died 2 years ago from pneumonia in the United States? How many kids? Absolutely tragic, but how many kids do you think died from pneumonia in 2019? It's a little over 900 kids. Super sad, very tragic. How many kids in the last 18 months do you think have died from COVID-19? You just had to get maybe 1,000, 10,000, 50,000? According to the CDC, it's just over 300. But still, what do people say? Oh, we got to protect those kids, man. You got to mask up on those kids, even though they have, statistically, they are more likely to die from pneumonia than they are from COVID-19. And this is where it gets really ridiculous. And again, this is where I feel that mommy energy coming in, where we all have to make sure that we're all very good boys and very good girls, and that we shouldn't ever get COVID-19. Give you another example. It says, even if you get COVID-19, it's not going to impact you. That's what Dr. Ali Mokhtad said, an infectious diseases expert for the Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation at where? The University of Washington. It says, you're not going to end up in a hospital and definitely not in the morgue. So what do we care about breakthrough cases? If I'm vaccinated, you're vaccinated, what do we care about breakthrough cases? You know, when Inslee said that thing the other day, when Inslee said that people that don't get the vaccine are, you know, bioreactors for the virus and, you know, the 50-year-old Trump voter or whatever it is, I was thinking to myself, that's such a mommy thing to say. It's such a mommy energy type thing to say, where you're chastising people for not going out there and getting the vaccine. And I might submit to Inslee that if he didn't have that kind of overt, oppressive, kind of feminine energy innate within him, and he sat down and he said, okay, listen, bros, I get that we're all masculine about this kind of thing. Okay, bros, listen up. I get that, you know, the vaccine is experimental and all this other stuff, but I'm talking to you man to man. If he had approached it like that, I think he would have had a better success rate than trying to shame people all of the time. You know, I legitimately thought, couple weeks ago, that I would never have to talk about COVID-19 again. I thought we were done with it. I thought we were moving on from it. And now I'm getting these echoes as if we're just going to re-enter this whole cycle again in a couple of months. And I'll tell you, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it in the way that if my mom lived in my backyard for 6 months, I would ask her to move out. I'm just so exhausted from this idea of this constant energy, this constant mommy energy, watch a helicopter parenting energy that I feel from government currently. Again, people who want the vaccine, they rushed out to get the vaccine. I waited a couple of months and then I got the vaccine. Everybody else, what do you want them to do? What do you want them to do? I'll ask you one last question before we get out of here. Why do you think we always focus on cases? In the, you know, since the vaccine came out, why do we only focus on cases and not on deaths? Because they've dropped precipitously. It's an amazing, amazing achievement. So this whole fixation on cases, 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 breakthrough cases, breakthrough cases, breakthrough cases. This is the kind of thing, again, that is that overbearing mommy energy that we no longer need in our lives. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Shane Peterson and a whole lot more Soft Rock Wednesday after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Okay, so Shane, this good news is a little bit different than most good news is, because it involves me. Happy Soft Rock Wednesday, by the way, Shane.
Oh, happy Soft Rock Wednesday to you, my guy.
So a couple weeks ago, the world-famous John Curley called me up, and he says, hey, what are you doing on the weekend of, I think it was like the 18th and the 19th? And I said, I don't know what I'm doing. And he said, do you want to go with me to Napa, California, and do this auction thing? So I guess John Curley has auction. Have you heard about this, Shane? Like, John Curley has, like, an auction business where he goes and he goes, like, ha-da-da-ba, 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 right?
Yeah, he's apparently he's pretty good at it. You know,
right.
That's actually something that I've actually aspired to be in my life, is actually an auctioneer. I think that would be a real fun job to have. 275-754-753-75 You bought it.
Yeah.
I just picture myself doing that.
So John has probably one of the best sales voices I've ever heard in my life, and he's also got one of the best broadcasting voices I've ever heard in my life. So like, John is like a consummate professional, and so he calls me and he says, "Do you want to MC this event? I'll auctioneer, you MC it, I'll pay you, I'll pay for your plane ticket, we'll have a couple drinks, have a couple of laughs, so on and so forth." I immediately got a shot of adrenaline, and I was like, that's not really my scene. You know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of like a weird, antisocial kind of a guy. And as much as I love being in front of people, the idea of being in front of Kate Hudson and Nancy Pelosi and all these other characters was just too much for me. So I said, John, thank you so much for the offer, but I don't think I'm the guy to do it. Because he was like, you can do it, Jack Stein. You, all you got to do is use that big old voice and say, like, hey, here's a trip for two to the Caribbean. You know, and he was doing his thing. But for I just don't have that in me, Shane. You know what I mean? It's not a part of me in the same way that hockey is not a part of me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can understand that. Well, I think you should reply back to him and let him know that you have a board operator and producer that could do it.
No, here's the part of the story, though. So he actually went to Napa, right? And he goes to benefit the arts. And then he had this bit set up with John McEnroe, where John McEnroe was supposed to come out and like yell at him for not being a good enough auctioneer. And it's a really funny bit. But John McEnroe, I don't know if he had one too many adult soda pops or whatever, but he came out and he gave one of the most awkward stories and kind of showman-y kind of things that I'd ever seen in my life. So I guess they were supposed to auction off this this tennis match with John McEnroe. $600,000. And so if you go to My Northwest right now, John Curley can tell the story better than I can. But it ended up being John Curley standing on the stage with John McEnroe, and I think the tennis match went for something like $20,000. So super embarrassing, super cringe. And if you listen to John Curley talk about it, he handles it like a total pro. But he's with McEnroe, and so it makes the whole thing even more awkward. So I recommend that people go check out this this segment over at My Northwest. You can listen to the entire segment right now. It's on the front page. But the good news is, Shane, is that sometimes my intuition about where I should and should not go is right on. My agoraphobia, my unwillingness to leave my house, my fear of other people, my desire to not shake people's hands and not look them in the eye, sometimes it pays off. And in this case, I could have been on stage with a drunk John McEnroe and John Curley having to navigate John McEnroe completely ruining the bit, which would have been such a funny bit, and being up there and just being this awkward dude having to stand there while his tennis match goes from like $25,000 down to $20,000. And again, they thought they were going to get $600,000 for it, Shane.
$600,000 to play tennis against a retired tennis player.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
What? Really? Yeah. That doesn't. Who in their wildest dreams would pay that much? I mean, I don't know. Somebody paid, what was it, 28 million or billion or something to send his kid up to space? I mean, that's different than playing hockey. I don't see what you would. Or hockey. Hockey's on my mind today. This draft got me all worked up.
I know.
It doesn't make any sense. It's ridiculous.
So, but the good news is, Shane, is that I was not there. And I didn't have to experience this. Thankfully, John Curley was there and was able to navigate it because he is a professional. Had I been there, it would have been bad news bears. And I'm not just saying that to be self-deprecating. I have a weird, I'm kind of a flighty guy. I'm kind of a neurotic, flighty guy. So you put me on stage in front of Jennifer Hudson and Nancy Pelosi, anything could have happened, man. I could have totally broken down as a performer. So I'm glad I made the decision to follow my gut on this one, Shane Peterson.
I mean, Nancy Pelosi was there and you didn't get the opportunity to go see your favorite politician?
Didn't want to go. I just didn't want to go, man. You know, me, I will do speaking engagements, no problem. You want me to talk at a college? You want me to talk at some kind of a Republican thing or some kind of Democrat thing? No problem whatsoever. I'll do it. You want me to do like a song and a dance and like a, hey, everybody, who wants to win a trip to Trinidad and Trinobago? It's just not in me, man. I don't have that gene, Shane Peterson. It's just not a part of me.
Well, I guess that's kind of a good thing. I mean, that kind of makes you feel and act more authentic all the time if you just avoid things that actually make you go into a tight situation. So, I mean, hey, right on, right on.
Exactly. So I recommend that everybody goes over to My Northwest and listen to John Curley tell the story because it's absolutely hilarious. And John is a master at what he does. And I'm sure one of these days I'll go with him to do it, but just not this last weekend. So, all right, we'll take a really quick break when we get back. Speaking of awkward, Billy Sunshine is going to be on the line, and we are going to be having a debate about Shane Peterson, Nancy Pelosi, Kevin McCarthy. Should they have split up this whole January 6th commission the way that they did? We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this.